5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I know you're gonna dig this.
You make $5 million a year. I'm a jerk on the radio. I know better.
Those are facts. Print that. Tweet that.
I don't like people or teams or products that dodge the heavy lifting.
If you don't like what we say or anybody says, here's what I would suggest. Get a rating.
The idea that you preface your opinion by what your identity is to me insane.
You gotta be kidding me. You can't run this clown out of town fast enough.
This man is a disgrace. He's throwing everything away. Get him the hell out.
That is a take. It's a strong take. It's one of the best takes ever.
Welcome to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. Now, here's your host, Jason Barrett.
Good to have you here for another installment of the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. I am Jason Barrett. This is our 11th episode of Season 4, and as always, the BSM Podcast is brought to you by Core Image Studio. Be sure to check them out at coreimagestudio.com if you're interested in giving your brand an imaging upgrade. On today's episode, I'm joined by Matthew Collar of Score North in Minneapolis. Matthew hosts Purple Daily, a Vikings-focused football show, which airs weekdays from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. on 1500 a.m. in the Twin Cities. One major difference, though, with Score North, they're not just focused on what's created on the radio. The brand has a very cool multi-platform approach, which involves producing content for Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and of course, podcasting. You'll learn more about it in a few minutes during my chat with Matthew. If you've taken some time to listen to any of our episodes this season, I'd love to know what you valued most. Was there a particular guest who stood out? Are there others who you want to hear on future episodes? Is there a particular subject you think would be interesting to explore? The one great thing about podcasting is there are no rules. This content can be whatever I want it to be or whatever you want it to be, and I want to produce material that's of value to you. So if you have any feedback on this season or want to offer a thought or two for next season, my inbox is always open. Email me at jbarrett@sportsradiopd.com. It's greatly appreciated. A quick reminder, the Barrett Sports Media Summit is coming to New York City on February 26th and 27th. The two-day sports media conference will originate from the LA Citigroup Theater. 24 participants have been announced so far. We'll have more to come in the upcoming months. For tickets and information on reserving your hotel room, check out bsmsummit.com. I hope to see you there. It's time now to bring you my conversation with Matthew Collar of Score North. And since relocating to Minneapolis, Matthew has become an integral part of the Twin City sports scene, primarily covering the Minnesota Vikings. He's had the benefit during his career of working for some talented programmers such as Andy Roth, Alan Davis, Brad Lane, and now Phil Mackey. We went through his career travels, talked about the different type of approach that Score North takes to content creation, and I think you're going to come away with a better understanding of what makes Matthew successful. So enjoy the conversation. 3, 2, 1. I like to start off with everybody going back to their beginning. Before you got to Minneapolis, you went through a number of stops in your career. So take me back when you first started listening to sports radio. Who it was that captured your attention and made you want to even pursue this crazy business?
Well, that's an interesting question because the answer is probably nobody, really. I went to college to be a writer and had my focus on trying to be the next Dan Wetzel or something, like
right.
A columnist who did investigative reporting and things like that. And that was kind of my angle when I was in college and where I was pursuing. So I was writing for the newspaper and writing columns and things like that and trying to stir things up at the Stylus newspaper, is what it was called at Brockport. And I didn't appear on any college radio or anything like that, but a friend of mine worked as an intern for another sports radio station, and he asked me, like, hey, would you have any interest in this? And at first I was like, not really, I kind of want to be a writer. But then I met with the host and he said that I could write some blogs for their website. So I was like, okay, all right, well, an opportunity to have someone publish me on a radio station website, which at the time their radio station website was like girls in bikinis or whatever.
The hot chick of the day, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So they thought, well, okay, we'll have him write, you know, some things about the American Hockey League team in town and the AAA baseball team. So I was like, okay, great, an opportunity to write. And then by the end of the internship, I was doing some fill-in hosting and things like that. So I decided, you know, this is actually working pretty well for me, and maybe I could just kind of be multifaceted. So I found out that you could buy time on the weekends on most sports radio stations who aren't running anything on Saturday.
You could buy time anywhere on a radio station.
Yeah, right, right. So I went out and I sold some time and got enough money, just barely, maybe not all the money. I might have had to go in the red a little bit, to do a 1 hour Saturday show. And from there, it was focused mostly on hockey. From there, a radio station in Buffalo, WGR, heard what I was doing, mostly from me sending them emails constantly about how they should hire me. And eventually they did, as a board op. And then I got to cover the minor league hockey team of the Buffalo Sabres, which was the Rochester Americans from there, and sort of just kept building the way that you build, you know, sports update anchor and then producer. And when I was producing, I also got to do like Buffalo Bills post-game show and pre-game show and things like that, which was a wild trip for sure with the way that team played while I was in Buffalo. And then got the job here in Minneapolis after I don't know how many different times of applying to other jobs and flying out to different cities and doing interviews for jobs that I didn't get and things like that. But it has worked out incredibly, incredibly well here in Minnesota.
So when you got the break with GR, which is a very successful station, what did they start you at doing? And who'd you convince? Was that Andy Roth at that time?
It was Andy Roth, okay. Yes. And I'm sure Andy would tell you that he grilled me in my interview about how I didn't know how to run an audio board. And I was like, look, I'll learn how to run an audio board. You can't teach somebody to write and be good at this. And I guess that sold him pretty well on it. So he brought me up there, and it was mostly the late night shifts of running ESPN radio. I remember a particularly low moment of running like the Hawaii Bowl, and it was going on until 1 o'clock in the morning or something. I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, just sitting there at the board and trying to post some stuff on the website. And you're thinking, does it get any more boring in radio than this? But he gave me tons of opportunities to get on the air as a sports update anchor. And then the hosts there would bring me into the conversation and things like that. So that's kind of how it got the ball rolling a little bit. And it was like, prove that you can do this thing first. And if you can run the board right, then you can do the next thing. And what I always will appreciate about Andy Roth is him being very detailed, like attention to detail. I think he's a psycho for listening to the radio station in his house and listening to how I was running the board. But you know what? If I missed a 10-second ID, or if I was a little bit slow on the commercial and there was that pause there or something, he'd be paying attention, and he would call me up in the studio and say, why were you late? What were you doing? Why weren't you paying attention? And that, as somebody who was really young and new in the industry and hadn't done the college radio thing, I needed that. I needed somebody to be detailed and hard on me. And then we had great conversations about how this all worked and a lot of the fundamentals that I still use today. And that came from those early days of working with Andy.
So aside from the details, I mean, GR has been successful for a long time. You spent almost 6 years there. What is it about the brand that makes them so successful, in your opinion?
Well, I think for one, they have the Buffalo Bills and Sabres rights, and that is huge there. I mean, the Sabres and Bills are just part of the fabric of mm-hmm. the entire community. I mean, I remember when there were conversations about, you know, could they move to Toronto or something for the Bills, and I just thought, I could never imagine that from this community, is anyone ripping this team from them because of how rabid of fans they are, but also just like how it's part of being from there is that you are a Buffalo Bills fan. I mean, you would have a hard time finding anybody who isn't, who lives in Buffalo. And that station launched in an interesting time in Bills history, as they were sort of coming out of that great era. And I think the timing of it is sort of part of it too, as Buffalo had these sports tragedies that in a way brought people together. And then the Sabres got really relevant, and people started to, I guess, like the generation of millennials started to gather to sports talk radio, which you don't always expect, and be interested in the Sabres and things like that. And I also think that too, the hosts that they have are Buffalo guys for the most part or have lived there for a really long time who truly understand the tenor you need to strike after every loss, after to react to every game and things like that. I mean, now both teams are actually doing pretty well, so I don't know how they do it. But I think that they completely understand what Buffalonians want to hear, what they want to talk about, what's on their mind, and they are great at capturing the thing. Like, whatever it is that you as a Buffalo Bills fan woke up on Monday thinking about, you know you're going to turn on, and Howard and Jeremy and Mike and Chris in the afternoon are going to hit those notes and talk about that. And I think that they're great at balancing their reactions and being super creative. That's what I've learned for the show is, you know, sometimes if you get bored, you should draft stuff. And sometimes if you need to stir the pot, you should. And sometimes if you need to cool people down, you should, and things like that. So I think those guys do a tremendous job of sort of being themselves as part of the community. And if you go to a Bills game, you'll probably see one of them in the stands. If you go to a Sabres game, the same thing. Mm-hmm. They have season tickets. And I think that's maybe different from other markets, but it really, really works for that one.
You mentioned their talent. You work closely on the morning show with Howard. What is it about a guy like that who's been very successful there? You talked about hitting the right notes and all that, but you also see the guy off the air and what goes into his work. I remember I was programming in San Francisco. He'd reach out to me to ask for contacts for people he was looking for, and I always respected that. I thought, wow, here's a guy. He knows I'm in the company. He's just saying, hey, listen, Bills are playing Niners. I'm looking for an angle. And I just thought, man, the guy's grinding, trying to make something happen for his show. Having worked with him, what does a guy like that do that makes him successful, and what was probably the biggest challenge of producing him?
I think that, I mean, I could talk about Howard for such a long time because the minute I took over as the producer for his show, one of the first days I was there, he said, your mic's open. I trust you. Jump in there when you want to. And that gave me like immediate confidence because he knew that I didn't want to be behind the board for the rest of my career. He also knew that I was out there grinding, reporting on stuff that could help for the show, you know, like the prospects and things like that for the Sabres. And instead of being like, oh, you're a kid, you don't know anything, whatever, he was the exact opposite. So I can't thank him enough for how much he helped me in my career. And I also think his work ethic is really, truly incredible. I mean, you mentioned him grinding, but he was there before either of us, the other two on the show, every day in his office. He was, you know, filling notebooks per week with things that he wanted to say, statistics, articles that he read. And then after the show, you would think the man would want to get a nap since he had been there since 4:30 in the morning. And yet he was making phone calls to people like you trying to book guests and things like that. Because I thought initially, like, wait, doesn't the producer book all the guests? And he'd be like, oh, I already booked the whole week. I'm like, okay, I guess I'll work on some other stuff then. I think that's part of it. I also think that it's really easy when your genuine personality is so enthusiastic and natural on the air, and like Howard is off the air, who he is on the air. If you get him to react about something and his voice goes up three octaves, that's not a gag that he does. Like, that's what happens. And when he goes off on a rant about the Bills punting on fourth down, the minute the mics go off, he's still ranting like that. Right. Like, it's exactly who he is. And I think that one thing about sports talk radio is you just can't really pretend to be something that you're not. And the ones who are really, really great at it are exactly who they are off the air as they are on the air. And everybody knows when they're listening, yeah, this is who Howard Simon is. I mean, he's a great person. He comes across as a really, really nice guy who is super emotional about the Buffalo Bills and the Buffalo Sabres. And I just think that people connect to that. They feel like they know him. And if you've ever met him, you would feel the exact same way.
Now, during that time, you talked earlier about Andy Roth and his attention to detail. You also, during that time, correct me if I'm wrong, worked under Alan Davis, right?
I did, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
How were they similar and different as programmers?
What Andy did listening to the station at home and then calling the board ops, I don't think Alan would quite go that far. That was something that he wouldn't have done. Andy also had schedules made out for 6 months in advance. And sometimes we'd get to Thursday and be like, do we know the schedule for next week with Alan Davis? Because he was really focused, and not that Andy wasn't. He was focused on making sure we understood the philosophy of good content and not necessarily nitpicking from a day-to-day basis with Alan Davis. And so what was great for my development was after every show, almost every day, I would go down to his office and just sit across from him and say, here's what we did today. What did you think of this? What did you think of that? What did you think of our angle on that? And there's so many small things that he helped me with, like, you know, he was saying there's certain words that you say that come across as so harsh that they could be off-putting, you know, and on the East Coast or anywhere in the East, you tend to hammer teams. But if you sort of go too far, it could be like, okay, this is uncomfortable or something like that. So work on that balance and just really more of the, instead of focusing on, hey, you say this word too much or something like that, it would be like, here's the broader sense for what works in sports talk radio. And let's understand those notes to hit on a daily basis. Let's understand how we need to get in on a breaks and you know, the fundamentals of things too, and how not to waste time and when to waste time. Because sometimes you talk about, you know, whether you like Cheetos or not or something like that, and balancing all those things. And I don't think people realize when they listen how many balls are in the air at once for a host of a show. And so he was great at helping me understand those things. And both of them just gave me so much opportunity. And with Alan, he pushed me up into the full-time position of being the producer there. It was kind of like what Andy left pretty early in my development, and then Alan took over and just continued to give me opportunities wherever he could and supported me. And there were times where I would, I don't know, step in it a little at times. I'm sure that there were more than a few times that the Sabres or Bills called him and said, your guy was too hard on us, or he did this or that or the other thing. In fact, I know that happened. There were a few beefs that happened or whatever else, and he would always get the phone call, but he would also not be too hard, or he's not going to take away the airtime when I made a mistake, but rather let's fix it and work through it. And that patience, I think, was really key for helping me kind of work my way into who I wanted to be as a host.
So after you worked for Andy and Alan, you talked about going on job interviews, not getting the gig. Minneapolis winds up giving you an opportunity to come here. What did you do to convince him to help you land the gig that the others who you had interviewed with didn't?
What's interesting about that is Brad Lane isn't the one who hired me. It was actually Derek Wetmore who was running the website. I was only hired to come out and basically write for the 1500 ESPN website. But similarly to my ideas in Buffalo, it was like, I'm going to be a full-time host here, right? That's the goal.
Now, like, did you have to talk to Wetmore, Phil Mackey, and Brad Lane and everyone else under the sun?
So it's interesting that I had not met Brad Lane until I got the job and moved here. It was like the way it was done then was kind of separate. So I had talked to Phil Mackey once, but it was mostly all through Derek Wetmore, who was the web editor at the time. And basically my job was going to be just to come here and just to write for the website and then go on with the guys twice a week for an hour or 20 minutes or something like that, call in out from the Vikings facility. And it was a job that was kind of limited to that, which I was happy about and always wanted to be a reporter. But I had plans on trying to push out the walls. And then when I got here with Brad, the number one thing that he did for the on-air was explain the differences between being in Buffalo, an eastern city, and a Midwest city, and how different Vikings fans and fans here react to kind of the way their teams are analyzed. And you know, that doesn't mean that Midwest fans are soft or something like that. It's just that a lot of times in Boston, New York, and Toronto might be this way, people want to hear their teams hammered if they lose. I mean, they want everybody fired. Why aren't you going into press conferences yelling at the coaches? What's wrong with you? And here, it's more like, let's take a more analytical approach, because burn it all to the ground is not exactly the same sort of tone that you want to set. And that has been great, because I feel like that pushes me to even work harder to find more fun and different angles when they lose and try to go farther to explain what happened from, you know, gathering things from the Vikings and the post-game press conferences and things like that, as opposed to just who can we shred after this game, which is still a good model for sports talk radio. I'm not criticizing that.
But emotion draws people in.
So the same thing with Alan Davis in Buffalo. You know, I'm kind of, you know how they say sometimes about players in any sport of like, it's easier to bring somebody back than to try and get them tuned up. Well, I'm the guy you need to bring back a little bit, clearly. And I think Brad did a great job of laying that out for me. And then just giving me opportunities and believing in me on the air. He didn't have to give the web reporter any more opportunities to fill in hosts and things like that. And he did, which was awesome. And I appreciate that.
You talked about the difference in mentality and the way fans consume content and react to things in the Midwest versus the Northeast. Talk to me about adjusting to Minneapolis and earning the market's trust, because a lot of guys, I just had this chat with one of your guys in the door, and we were talking about this, and I said, you can always tell the difference between a guy who's buying a house and a guy who's renting in a market. And, you know, to get people in a market who've lived it their whole lives to believe that you care about their team, how did you go about earning their trust, given the fact that this is a brand new city, you haven't lived here, and obviously this is a pretty passionate sports town?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that the job helped me out with the way it was laid out. Because if you're asked to be on every single day and then you're thrown into a new market and you want to convince those people that you care as much as they do, that's probably a hard and long process, I would think. It takes a while, and I've seen our friend Rami Makhlouf go through that and do a really excellent job of it. But for me, it was much easier because I came as a reporter. So it was coming on just a couple of times a week onto the shows to break things down from more of a straight sort of standpoint of, here's what's going on, here's what they think about this guy, here's what they think about that situation, and what's next for the Vikings, those sorts of things. So people got to hear the name and hear the voice a little bit, but I didn't have to necessarily establish myself as having like a real true personality on the air until a little while later, until I started filling in hosting. And that helped sort of with the transition, because they already knew the name, but now, like, okay, we're finding out more about where I'm from and things like that as you're on the air more often. And we start to do things like having me pronounce different Minnesota towns and cities and stuff like that, and see if I could get them right. And I thought that the other guys did such a great job of it, because they gave me instant credibility as a reporter by bringing me on and basically treating me like I'm the guy who's got the answers out there at the Vikings facility. That helped a lot. And then as I started to fill in host and get on the air more often, then it was, okay, I'm here, I'm not from here, but I'm loving it here, and I'm doing all the things that you guys do. I'm going to your lakes, I'm going to the state fair, I'm trying the foods that you guys love here, I'm making fun of how bad your wings are compared to Buffalo, which, my gosh, there is a big difference. It's really true that Buffalo has the best pizza and wings, but anyway, I've lost 10 pounds since I moved here, so I guess I won't complain about that. But kind of indoctrinating yourself a little bit to more of the culture outside of just the sports. I mean, anybody can Google what happened in 2009 or something like that with the Vikings. So, of course, I did my research and background, and you learn a lot by just listening to the other guys on the station about the history. But it was more about sort of showing Minnesotans, I want to be here, because this is a market where they want you to like them.
Right.
Like, it's not a market that's necessarily defensive about itself, but they love Minnesota. Like, Prince lived here and he loved it, and these people love it too. And they always want to tell people, hey, Minnesota's way better than you think. So they want to hear that you're embracing it too. They don't want to hear that you're just here on a stop on to the next place. And also, I would say, when you make the comment about buying a house versus renting, buying a house probably helped too. Like, my wife and I making ourselves part of the media and buying a house and saying, hey, we want to be here, we love this place. I think all of those things sort of played into how easy of a transition it was for me.
You talked earlier how when you got into the business, you originally wanted to write and be a reporter. And, you know, a lot of times, going back probably 15, 20 years ago, print business looked at radio as like, yeah, those guys are idiots. They just run their mouths. They don't do the homework, right? And then here you are, you're a reporter evolving into a talk show host. So you're kind of going from the I've been the print guy to now I'm the entertainer, right? And there's a fine line between being informational and informative and somebody that people can trust and get good content from. But also, you have to deliver opinions, and there's a fine line between information and opinion, because not everybody, you know, likes to blend the two. Mm-hmm. How did you go about evolving yourself from the reporter Matthew Collar to the talk show host slash entertainer Matthew Collar?
Yeah, it's a great question, and I was lucky enough in Buffalo to get enough on-air experience so when I was a reporter here, I kind of knew how to walk that line a little bit of, I'm not just going to give you the information because that's kind of boring. I mean, if they, what's going on out there with the Vikings and all I say is, well, Mike Zimmer said this, I mean, that's pretty dull.
Right.
So I would kind of blend that, well, here's what he said and here's my angle on it. Here's my reaction. So what I've tried to do now that I'm talking every day is kind of take that same approach of here's what I'm going out and getting and then how can we process this information and turn it into angles and stories. And in the world we live in, if you don't have good headlines, for example, on your website, no one clicks them and you get fired, right? So like you have to think and process in that way of how can I take what the reporting is, because now everybody knows most of the reporting, and spin that forward into an angle. So instead of just Adam Thielen is out of practice, well, that's great, but that's not a radio take. What does it mean now that he's out of practice? And starting to think that way as a host slash reporter in Buffalo in my early days, that really helped me when I came here and was spending every day on the air. And I think it's worked out really well because when you're doing the reporting and you're doing the writing, it's a great way of laying out all of the information that you have. And it's sort of right at your fingertips as you start to talk about it. And so you can kind of grab from different buckets of things that you've heard from sources or that you've learned in the locker room after games or whatever else, heard in press conferences and reading between the lines and things like that, that brings something different to hosting than you might usually expect. I mean, oftentimes a host has to go to a reporter to get that those nuggets of information, but now I can take them and use them as a host to have even deeper conversation. So I think that that combination works. And I don't know how common it is of people who host a daily show to be in locker rooms all the time, because I think certainly with some hosts, there would be those fights more
right.
often.
Right.
Depending on, and so maybe this is the perfect market for that, because like the approach that you take isn't one that's necessarily going to start fights, but more of being analytical about it. But I think it's worked as a real advantage for me, and it helps me because my brain thinks of everything as an article. So I kind of frame the conversation the same way you would with an article, of like a starting point, an ending point, the things that back up what I'm trying to say. And it might be a little bit unique, but I think it works here.
Let's talk about your show. You host Purple Daily on Score North. Part of that cast, you work with a few former players. You also have some reporters and media folks like Courtney Cronin, Myron Metcalf. But two of those former players are Alex Boone and Sage Rosenfeld. Very knowledgeable, very entertaining guys on the air. You're the quote-unquote radio host.
Right.
They are guys who've lived the life, played the game, and here you are talking football 2 hours a day with them. How do you go about earning the respect and trust of a guy who's played for 10, 15 years saying, does this guy understand my language? Does this guy have an ability to talk on my level and think on my level? How did you go about building connections with those guys to where they look at you as someone they want to have a 1 or 2 hour conversation with?
It starts with them, because neither one of them has this mentality of you didn't play the game. And usually that sort of goes away as guys get away from the game and they're retired and they don't care so much as like current players. If current players put that wall up of like, I'm not talking to a reporter. I'm not saying all of them, but some. I'm not talking to a reporter. You didn't play the game. You don't know what I'm dealing with here. But then as you get away from it, probably you realize more like, oh, a lot of people have good things to say about this game who aren't necessarily in the meeting with Mike Zimmer. And if they want to succeed in the world of broadcasting, you can't really take that angle, right?
Right.
Otherwise, you're just going to be constantly saying, sorry, I don't respect you. But being in the locker room every day actually means quite a bit to these former players, because they're saying, yeah, you might not be in the meetings and you might not know what the play call was, but you're there and you're putting in the effort to truly understand it. And doing the homework on football, for me, it was, if I'm going to cover football and if I'm going to do a show every day on it, I better understand what coverages I'm looking at. I better understand personnel packages. I better understand play calls, route combinations, schemes, all that sort of stuff. So I when I got here, bought football books. I mean, I knew football from playing Madden and, you know,
Tecmo
talking and Tecmo Bowl and things like that, but not at the player level. And, you know, I decided, and I would never claim that I know as much as these guys, but I decided if I want to speak their language, then I better really understand this stuff to be able to ask them questions on their level. And I think that that's helped as well. So we can push the conversation farther into the weeds in a good way, I think, you know, give people something that they're not going to hear anywhere else, because it isn't just, hey, why'd the offensive coordinator make that play call? It's, well, you know, they had this coverage and maybe this is the explanation for doing it. And I hope that that's something that sort of separates us, that we can talk. It's almost like being right there in the locker room and listening to what it would be like, the discussions about what happened, whether it was good or bad.
There are a lot of radio hosts around the country who work with ex-athletes. And I think what you're touching on, being informed and making the effort, definitely rubs off on them. But there's also something to be said for the relationship you build off the air. Like, I know since I've been in here, you've talked about how you'll have text conversations with Alex or talk to Sage about things, right? How important do you think that is for a radio host, any market in America? They're working with an ex-athlete for the first time. Is that vital to doing the job, or do you think it's something that, okay, it's a nice benefit, but you can be successful without it?
There is a little bit of, you have to be able to, you know, bust on them like they want to bust on you because you're their new teammate. Now,
right.
I mean, these guys have been raised in an environment since the time they were little kids where you got your teammates, you treat each other a certain way, you give each other a hard time and stuff like that. So sometimes off the air, I'll say to Alex, why are you being so soft today? Why aren't you bringing it? Come on, buddy. And he's 6'8", 275 pounds, played offensive line for a decade, and does not have any issues with toughness, and loves to sort of fancy himself as that sort of tough offensive lineman guy. So, you know, you poke him a little bit, and he'll give it back to me. And I think that that helps the camaraderie. Also, just little things like Sage Rosenfels went to the Kansas City game, and we sat next to each other in the press box, and I just said, what do you see here? And things like that. And just having those sort of times off the air to understand how each other is seeing things, or going to the fair with Alex Boone and hanging out with him for a little while, walking through the crowds and riding the bus back to the station and things like that. And just talking off the record about his career or about radio and giving him feedback and things like that. And I would also say not being afraid to tell these guys when they're doing something wrong. Like, I'm the expert now.
Right.
I mean, if you tell me I got the coverage wrong that I was criticizing, then you're the expert on that. But if you're using the same word to describe something 50 times in a show, I should be able to say to you, hey man, you got a real crutch there and you
right.
need to fix that or whatever. And a lot of times you'd think, oh yeah, I don't want to be intimidated. This guy played in the NFL. I don't, you know, whatever. Not that journeyman quarterbacks intimidate that many people, but but usually they're used to being criticized by their coaches and things like that, and they want to hear what they could do better. And I'm sure there are some people who have massive egos, but I'm lucky enough to work with two guys who aren't, so they want to hear my feedback. I'll get texts from Alex. How'd that interview go? Did I nail that? Did I get that right? And I really appreciate that type of effort that they have both put in. Sage wanting to travel to games, Alex wanting feedback on how he could be better. If you get that engagement with them, because I'm sure everyone's worked with athletes where they're like, I'm whoever, and I'm just going to come in here and be myself, and it'll be fine. But it takes work. They learn that this is real work, and both of these guys have embraced that, and I think that's awesome.
Score North, your brand, is very different than a lot of radio brands. It's a brand focused on serving content across multiple platforms. In radio circles, this is what the quote-unquote radio guy does. Oh, well, they've got a cum of about 50,000 people. It's not that big. And then you look and you go, well, they got 40,000 on a stream, 10,000 on an app, 75,000 on YouTube, 500,000 podcast downloads, over 2 million video minutes. Now, all of a sudden, that sounds like a very different conversation. On the other hand, when you're trying to measure success, the way that so many people in radio have been trained for the last 30 years is, well, your ratings and your cum. Mm-hmm. And so this is a very different play. When you add all that up, you go, listen, there is a real active audience consuming this content. To someone on the outside who is not familiar with the station, the brand, the digital strategy, how do you sum up what Score North is?
I guess is trying to be in front of you no matter where you are is the way that we're trying to approach it. I can certainly tell you that the changes that we've made, I think, have been ultra positive for us to just have people be aware of who we are, what we're doing, what we have to say, that maybe it wasn't really there before, because there wasn't a huge brand name or team rights or something like that that would make it super obvious to people where to find us. So now, to if you go to YouTube on your phone and you search Vikings, we'll probably come up with our show. If you go to Twitter and you're looking for Vikings content, you'll probably find us talking about it. If you go into your podcast app and you want football, you're probably going to find us. That's the most positive thing that I've seen, is that now it wasn't just if you're in your car from this time to this time and happen to be on the AM side, which not everyone is all the time, then that was the only way you were going to find us. And now it's who isn't on Facebook, who isn't on Twitter, who doesn't listen to podcasts. I mean, everybody does at this point. And our goal is to be wherever you are, whichever. If you like Instagram, we want to make sure that we're there with you. And I've just seen huge gains in the number of people who discover us. And when we get the podcast numbers back, the website numbers back, and we just see it growing and growing, we think, like, yeah, this was the right way to go. And it also feels like, too, and who knows how real this is, but it helps my ego, is when you're the one that's pumping out content on Twitter and things like that, where you can get instant feedback from people, it can sort of start like great conversations. And by that, I sometimes mean people yelling at me, but mostly just like that fun, same feeling that you get from being on the air and taking calls and going back and forth with people. Well, that kind of exists 24/7 with these social media platforms. And I think we've seen that effect working
in a lot of markets, especially in radio. There's this tendency to look at, like, if two stations exist doing sports radio, well, there's got to be one that's successful and the other must die, right? And yet there's 50 stations, 40 of them are playing music. Nobody looks at it that way at music brands. But for some reason in sports talk, it's always like it's either them or us. You can't be both, right? Which is kind of silly, because if I like your show and I don't like what KFan has on, I'm going to listen to your show. Doesn't mean I won't like something else that they do. You're in a market where you go against a very strong radio station in KFan. You know people are going to tout their radio ratings. You guys have a different approach. But how do you handle that when people come up? Because I know radio guys in every building. Sure. We're all competitive. We all want the best ratings, and that's great. And some of the things you guys are looking at are just different. So how do you handle that when people bring up, look at how great KFan is?
Yeah, I was getting my hair cut one day, and the woman asked what I did for a job. And I was like, oh, I do a sports radio show. And she said, on KFan? Well, no, let me explain to you the whole thing. See, we've got podcasts, and it's a thing that does tend to happen, because they have the flagship, and they do a great job over there and everything else, and people know who they are, and they've got the Vikings established brand. So I look at myself as more of kind of like they have done their thing for such a long time with the high level, with the ratings of, let me try to just carve out an area that people want from me. Like, how can I be different from what they're doing? How can I bring you something that you won't hear there? Which doesn't necessarily mean I'm saying they suck and I'm great or something like that.
Right.
It's more of, hey, there's a lot of hours in the day to listen to podcasts or listen to radio shows or whatever else. And as far as like the personalities, everybody who works there that I interact with, I get along with great. And so it's like, hey, we can all have a piece of this pie. It's a really big pie, and people are spending a lot of their time paying attention to all of us. So let's just do the best job that we can. I kind of take that approach. I mean, there have certainly been places I've been or have to talk to friends or whatever where it gets nasty and uncomfortable and things like that. And I just don't really feel like it is that way. Maybe that's because I don't still pick up on the passive aggressive Minnesota thing. I have to ask other people, wait, were they being passive aggressive? Maybe they were. I don't know. Because I'm from Buffalo and we're more straightforward. But I feel like that's been my approach, is just, I don't really worry too much about what they're talking about or what they're doing or anything else. I'm just going to try to do the best I can, and then we'll see how things play out. And I think that our approach is a good one. I think that it goes enough against sort of the traditional radio model that it is unique, and that people will like the fact that they consume it whenever and wherever. But it's clear that with an AM signal and without a Vikings rights or whatever else, if we were coming on the air every day trying to hammer them and say, we're the real great station, like you might hear in New York or Boston or whatever, we're going to make fun of the other guys, that we might be looked at as just sort of petty and ridiculous. And I don't think that this place likes conflict like that. If Francesa and Michael Kay are yelling at each other in New York, it's got to be like, this is great, and fans must love it. I think if I started yelling and ranting about their guys at KFan, people would be like, what is wrong with you?
Right.
So it's a, and it's not really a necessarily a the deep down reporter in me to start stuff like that.
I'm going to wrap up on something I call quick hits. I'm going to hit you with four questions, just the first thought that pops into your mind. The better broadcaster, you or your wife?
Very different. It's obviously her, and I'll tell you why, because she didn't get fired from any of her play-by-play jobs.
The most underrated part of living in Minneapolis?
May 30th, when you walk outside and it is just so nice and there's so many things to do. I mean, that's the thing with the sports teams here. Sorry if this was supposed to be a short answer. But the thing with the sports teams here is if they don't succeed, then people will just go to their lake or, you know, do outdoor things or whatever else. The outdoor life is really amazing here. And I think it actually puts a pressure on the teams to know they have to succeed in order to keep your eyeballs. Because when the Twins are bad, people don't go. And when they're good, they do, because they got a lot of other things to do here. I think it's actually good for the teams to have that pressure. And it's good for us, too, because we have to continue to make great content. Because if we don't, people will just go to their lake house.
The PD, who's taught you most about sports radio?
It was probably Andy Roth. I mean, that's not a slight to Alan Davis at all, because probably more about the philosophy of radio, Alan taught me a ton. But just your first program director who gets hands on you and you don't know anything about it and starts to teach you about, here's how a clock works. I mean, think about right. that. I had no idea. I was like, what? When am I going to break? And they're like, no, you just read the clock that we have laid out for you in this binder. Like, I don't get it. Where's the what? So, I mean, him having the patience to teach me the ins and outs of going to a break, making a tease, like the most basic stuff that now you just do off the top of your head, I needed to learn all that from him.
And then finally, I know you're very active on Twitter. I also know you like diet soda.
Oh, man.
30 days. You can't have Twitter or diet soda. Which one are you
Twitter,
giving up?
Easy. I'm giving up Twitter.
So the reporter who needs to put his information out would rather not put information out because
That's
he
right.
can't give up diet
yes,
soda.
Yes. Diet Dr. Pepper specifically is the choice of all
reporters.
I was
ready to go diet Dr. Yes. Pepper, but you're sitting here with yeah. a can of Diet Coke.
Yeah,
so I'm like, wait, maybe he threw a curveball at
well,
me today.
Any diet will do if I have to. But yeah, I don't think I could go without that. And also, I think 30 days without Twitter might be like refreshing. Like, wow, why has no one yelled at me lately over reporting something or over some take that I had on Twitter? Oh yeah, that's right, because I'm not on Twitter. It's like I won't quit it because that's where you get all your news and everything else. And I truly do believe that it's 9 out of every 10 people are great, and we have a great time there. And I get a lot of story ideas by just knowing what fans want to know, so it's awesome. But the 1 out of 10 can really drag you down sometimes. The people who want to constantly start fights or insult you or whatever else, there are definitely sometimes, even me who likes to make fun of those people, can be like, okay, everyone, a little bit much about the number 3 quarterback or whatever. You know what I mean? So,
right.
I don't think that would be so much of a problem.
It's great seeing you, man. Continued success with the show, with everything you guys are doing. It's a fun brand to follow, and you guys are off to a great start over the last year.
Thanks for having me.
I'd say that was a pretty successful broadcast.
Thank you for listening to the Barrett Sports Media Podcast. To stay updated on the latest sports media news, follow Jason on Twitter at SportsRadioPD and visit our website, BarrettSportsMedia.com.